So I'm here in Pavilion Gardens with Sam Chittenden. For me, it's kind of pre-Edinburgh and pre-Camden at the same time, as we kind of cover both of them. Sam, you wrote this piece, you directed this piece, you took it to the Brighton Fringe.
We did.
So just bring us up to date on the story of how you got to write it, how it ended up at Brighton, and why it's going to Camden.
Okay. So I wrote this piece because an ex got in touch with me 2 years ago after over 20 years of seeing each other, and we went out for dinner. And it was one of the most bizarre, surreal and unsettling experiences of my life. So I thought, that's kind of an interesting thing. So I wanted to... So it sparked me thinking about how it is that we have different memories of shared experiences, essentially. So that was the kind of the seed of this play. And I spoke to lots of people who'd got back in touch with exes after breaking up and kind of collated a whole load of stories and ideas, because I didn't want the play to be about my experience. Just wanted that to be the kind of the beginning of it. I cast two great Brighton actors in it back in December of last year, and we workshopped the piece for a while, and so they've contributed their thinking and their experience to some of the text. Finished it quite late, as is often the case with Fringe stuff, and put it on at the very beginning of Brighton Fringe this year, so beginning of May.
So going back to that, you called it a seed. I sometimes call them critical instances,
okay,
you know, as
yes,
well.
Yes, indeed.
What made you say yes?
I think it just niggled. Wouldn't go away. And I wanted to write... I mean, I'd written some fairly short plays, and I wanted to now write a longer piece. So I was already thinking that I, you know, might write something for the Fringe.
But it kind of smells of unresolved business. So did you use theatre to resolve it?
No. It became not a personal thing, really. I think I was pretty pissed off at the time. I was, you know, it was pretty angry with the situation that ensued. But I don't think I've kind of written the piece in order to... doesn't feel like a cathartic thing to have written. I think it was just a fantastic idea, fantastic thought. You know, it kind of just lent itself to exploring. You know, and the more I spoke to people about it, the more I discovered that there's lots of rich material in that territory.
So you sort of harvested a good idea.
Yeah, I harvested.
Okay. Well...
And other people's, yeah. So kind of harvested lots of generous offerings of stories.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you allow me to follow you around a bit like a sort of, I'm not going to say Love Island, but kind of reality TV documentary. So what does the writer look like? Is there notebooks? Is this sitting up all night writing it in one draft? How did that go from idea to page?
No, not all in one go. Bits and pieces. So scraps of paper, ideas, thoughts. I tend to... I have kind of chunks of time writing when something moves from one shape to another quite a lot, and then there's a sort of fallow time of back to your seed metaphor, you know, just kind of nurturing it and thinking about it and exploring. But I have to, you know, give credit to Charlie Summers and Russell Shaw, who are the two performers in it, that the workshopping of an idea with them was a huge part of finding a shape for it and finding the kind of words that worked.
But how much script was there when you went into that workshop process? I mean, at one level you've got devised from zero, and at the other level you've got script and we workshopped it.
Yeah, there were kind of three audition pieces. So I wrote pieces for the auditions. So there was a monologue for each of the characters, and then a bit of dialogue. So, yeah, three scenes. I mean, there are about 30 scenes in it. It's a kind of very quick, you know, fast-paced, lots of little vignettes on scenes that are slightly different from each other. So there are about 30 in total, and we had three of them when we went into the rehearsal process.
And when you start a piece at home, and a lot of people try out new stuff in Brighton Fringe, it's a good part of the creative vibe of the city. How do you then take that further? I mean, you've decided to take it up to London. What's the rationale for that, and say, not, right, we're going to go and lose our shirt in Edinburgh?
Well, I've never not only taken a show to Edinburgh, I've never been to Edinburgh. So later this year, I'm going as a kind of spectator and you know, maybe a reviewer, to kind of experience a bit of Edinburgh, partly to decide whether I want to take a show there next year. But I don't think there's a kind of great strategy to, right, now I've done this, the next thing is to go to London or to go to Edinburgh. We were offered a slot, and I thought, you know, I said yes. Yeah, so I'm delighted to be offered. We've been offered a slot at Camden Fridge. In fact, a friend of mine spotted a gap, so somebody had kind of pulled out of the programme and they were looking for somebody to fill it. So I didn't have very long to think about it, and I think that always helps me as well. Yeah. It's kind of like you've got to say yes in 24 hours. So.
And so are you taking a pretty much finished piece to perform, or is it still in development?
Well, we're taking, partly because we've had other projects underway since May, we're pretty much taking the show as was. The text is pretty much as it was. We're in a different set, so the layout's different. Right. So we've got to rethink how that changed. We were at the Jukebox Theatre when we did it here, which is, you know, as you know, it's a very intimate space. So a lot of stillness, not much movement in it. So that sort of lent itself to the text. We've got to fill a bigger space, and we've got audience on two sides in the space we're in. So we've got to rethink that. But the script is pretty much as it was.
So yeah. I'm back in that fly on the wall mode now, in that workshop space. Yeah. So just give us a bit of a flavour, as specific as you can be, of what working with the actors, what you did to develop it.
Yeah. So, well, one of the things we've talked about before is kind of using a Meisner approaches, sort of approaches where you just use a really, really simple text and kind of keep repeating it and find different ways into it. So we did quite a lot of that. I gave them very simple words to play with. So, you know, and one of the things that was really struck by is how the same text can mean completely different things depending on the take you have. So an example would be, you know, classic thing we say when we meet somebody we haven't seen for a long time, that you haven't changed a bit. And you can say that as a really loving, wow, you haven't changed a bit, or a really angry, you haven't changed a bit. And so just giving them something simple like that to play with and find all the different layers and nuances of it was, you know, so that's kind of one of the kind of things we did.
And so as the writer who said, you know, this then wasn't personal, this was just a good idea, but it's quite a powerful life experience. Where was that subjectivity in that process? Had it really gone away, or did you find it revisiting you like a ghost?
Subjectivity of the writer.
Well, yeah, and also of what happened. This was based on real happening in you.
But isn't everything we write about based on either our personal experience or a kind of personal take on?
Yeah, but
you could
write a play about, I mean, horrendous topics, you know, which are up at the fringe in Edinburgh. You know, you could write about imagining what it's like to have dementia. But if you've got family that have had dementia, it's going to play into it.
Yeah.
This was based on a real experience. So were you in any way attempting by now to have a wall between that experience, or were you drawing upon it?
I think if I'd pretended I had a wall on it, I'd have failed. You know, I think we're always drawing on that experience. Yeah. But I was very conscious that this was, you know, it was a piece of theatre, a piece of art, and not a diary.
Mm. Mm. Going back to, you mentioned the intimate space of the Jukebox, and you know, venues are different. How did you get in? How did you claim that space? Because you don't get that long, do you, in fringe festivals and things, to own that space. Did you walk in and go, right, this is how we're going to do it? Did it change what you'd imagined? Had you blocked it in advance? How did you claim a theatre space?
So we were lucky, you know, because we're Brighton based, so it's a kind of local theatre. We were lucky that we'd rehearsed. We'd done a bit of rehearsal in the space, so we kind of knew how that was going to affect the way we worked, and our workshopping was in that space, so that was quite early. Yeah. So we kind of knew the space.
I mean, the challenging question is, and sometimes I do call it a Brighton phenomenon, we've got lots of small spaces, so it's intimate, and that's a good thing. But, you know, let me offer you a 500 seater in the semi round, you know, what would you do differently
with this play? I probably wouldn't do this play in a space that big.
What about 1,000?
Yeah. Or that? Yeah. I'd have to do a different play.
Okay, so you
certainly a different style of delivering it.
But what does that mean for, you know, if success means you get offered a tour, and suddenly we're going to get 30 dates in spaces of all different sizes, you know, what do you do?
Yeah, make the best of it, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know yet.
Okay. What about the space in London? I mean, you've obviously seen it, have you? So how would you compare that as a theatre maker to the space used in Brighton?
So it's slightly bigger. We've got about twice the audience, I think. So one of the things we had to think about in the Jukebox was visibility. So the audience are kind of on one level and the stage is raised. So you have to get the actors high enough up that everyone can see them. And at Tristan Bates Theatre, which is where we are in London, the audience is in raked seating. So that kind of, it changes, you know. And actually one of the things that's really choreographed in the piece is where the actor's attention is. So who are they talking to? Are they talking to each other? Are they talking? Are they thinking? Are they in memory? Are they talking to us? And of course, that's signaled by where they look all the time. So those sort of things become really, really critical in that space.
Do you think the ex, if he came to see the play, and then you have the dinner, would the dinner go differently?
No.
No.
My kids came to see the play, so we've talked about this, and they asked me, because she said, "Do you think he knows about it?" And I had I had just not thought about that possibility. That he would be aware that I was writing a play about exes getting back together, or that he, knowing that, would make the connection. I have a sneaking suspicion he might not. Mm. He might not make that connection. Mm. As one of the things that happened in the dinner, I said, "I really wish I'd known what your agenda was for meeting me." He said, "Well, why? What difference would it have made?" I said, "Well, could have chosen not to meet you." Mm. And really, why? So. So I don't know whether it would have
You're teasing us here, which is good. The writer Kurt Vonnegut said something that I did actually tried in my life too, in a way. It's an imagination exercise. I said, we're all mortal. We're going to die on a certain date. We were born on a certain date. And if you look back and just piled up all the physical stuff that you've accumulated back in 1970, was that wardrobe and that guitar, and there was that car in 1993. Yeah. And up ahead, it's going to be filled with more stuff. If you just lay out all your creative output, is there a through line? Is there a kind of theme that is Sam Chittenden, the writer, the director, that you can see emerging?
I think it's really difficult to see that when you're in it. And I suppose you kind of rely on the marks that you've made and the responses you've got, so you kind of have to look at it from that perspective. I mean, I haven't been creating for that long, doesn't feel like that long in my, you know, in my long life, it's a relatively small proportion of that.
Are you noticing a restlessness in you, like expressing this play of stuff you still want to do? Or is it giving you a guide?
I am. I have a very low boredom threshold, and if I finish something, I kind of usually want to know that there's something else coming on, which often means doing too many things, doing more than I should. But yes, I'm restless to write something else, create something else.
But do you let things end and then you write something else because you're restless? I mean, in terms of this is going to go on in Camden Fringe, it might get other gigs and dates.
Yeah, no, I'm,
have you got other stuff on
yeah,
the go?
Yeah, I'm writing other stuff already, but that's... I don't have a plan. There's a school of thought that says, well, you should squeeze all the juice out of everything you've created. You know, the financially sensible thing to do would be, right, how can I really work this product? But I don't think I'm the best producer for my stuff. I'd love to get somebody else to come and say, great, be creative and we'll make all this happen for you, but that's not how it works in small theatre.
Final question, which is kind of an invitation to you, really. These interviews we do, they're not PR interviews. They're about talking about your work. But what would be your kind of gentle invitation to people looking for a show to see at Camden Fringe to come and see yours?
To come and see mine? It's... Everyone who came to see it in Brighton, or not everyone, but the kinds of thing people said is that it made me feel really uncomfortable because it resonated with me. Oh gosh, that's what it's like, isn't it? So I think there's lots of things in it that people will recognise. There is laughter in it, there's sadness in it. It's fast paced. It's a little multifaceted jewel of a thing.
So you say.
So I say, indeed.
Sam Chittenden, thanks very much indeed for talking to us.
Thank you.